You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Back to you again after some technical difficulties caused our last podcast not quite make it to the air, but we're here now and excited to be back with you on the line once again. Our old buddy, fellow editor at RedLegNation.com, Bill Lack. You doing all right today, Bill?
Doing all right. Less than a month till opening day.
Yeah, I'm going to need you probably at some point during this podcast or at some point to rein me in a little bit because I'm letting the excitement get to me a little bit. I'm really I don't know. I got those Pete Rose colored glasses on. I guess I just. Good feelings, good thoughts about some of these young guys. I'm excited. I'm as excited as I've been in a long time. And that's saying something after having gone through nine straight losing seasons.
Well, we'll have to give excited. You a dose of reality at some point here in the next few minutes.
Well, I'm afraid that once the season starts, a reality will sink in, and it won't be pretty. But anyway, let's jump right into it. Got a lot of things we want to discuss today. And the first topic of conversation that I thought we might want to get into is really what's gotten me excited so much here recently. It's all these young pitchers the Reds have that are really starting to impress more and more, and the more we get to look at them in spring training, I'm amazed. I don't remember a time with the Reds having this much really good young pitching talent. We all know about Homer Bailey and Johnny Cueto. We'll talk with them in a moment, and of course, this is another topic we've sort of beat to death, but I don't think you can talk about it enough. National media is talking about now, and that's a young Aroldis Chapman. He continues to impress, does he not?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and I think I even posted this today. There's an up and a downside to that, and I think this kind of becomes kind of self perpetuating. He looks good, so the media gets wound up. It pressures the Reds front. The media winds up the fans. The fans lean on the organization. You hope somebody has some semblance, enough sense to rein it in so that this kid isn't rushed along.
Yeah, that's what I'm concerned about. And, John Fay has, the beat writer for the Inquirer, speculated about Aroldis being brought north on the opening day roster. And I saw where today or yesterday, Mark Sheldon, the MLB.com beat writer, said the same thing. At this point, it's looking awfully like there's an awful good chance that he'll actually make the team. And I don't know. Of course, there are guys that get paid a lot more money than I do and know a lot more about the situation than I do. But I'm concerned that's not the best thing for Chapman. But, what are you going to do if he keeps pitching the way he's been pitching?
Well, I still don't think that means that he's major league ready. Small sample size, yada, yada, yada. He's very young. I think the Reds, and I hope that they did have a plan going into the spring training, and that they aren't going to be swayed by, 15 or 20 innings or whatever he throws out there in Arizona in the spring, that they stick to whatever their plan was.
Yeah, I hope so too. But then, you also got, I'd like to be a sort of privy to some of those internal discussions because maybe they had a plan and maybe the fact that, his off-speed stuff, his slider, breaking stuff is looking a lot better than anyone expected when they came in. I mean, we had, I think I've linked to three different reports from scouts that have seen Chapman pitch just this week. One of them was a scout for Kansas City, and his four-word reaction was, quote, "I mean, holy cow," after watching. Somebody said they clocked him at 102 on the radar gun. Just posted a scouting report from Keith Law over at ESPN, and sort of the most interesting excerpt from his scouting report was this. "I got my first live look at Aroldis Chapman on Monday in a game in Goodyear. It was attended by a few hundred other people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I have a two-word scouting report. That'll work. In terms of mechanics, Chapman takes an enormous stride towards the plate, pronates his arm reasonably early. The arm path isn't long. There's no violence or other major red flags in the delivery. If he stays healthy, he's a number one starter and should be able to come," well, he says come north or coming east this year, "but come north with the Reds in some role this year if they want him on the big league roster."
The thing that concerns me a little bit, and this may have just been, and I just only saw this the one day, I mean, he's been very effective, and there's no denying that, but he still isn't throwing a huge percentage of strikes. And to me, that's kind of a red flag that maybe these issues with his control aren't really as ironed out as we'd hope. You know, and I may be completely off the mark there, but I know the other day he threw just a, you know, not too far above 50% of his pitches were strikes.
And I think that for the most part, comments from the Brian Price, the pitching coach, and Jocketty and Dusty Baker, they have been pleased with his, well, I don't know about pleased, but his control has been better than some people expected, but certainly nowhere close to what it's going to have to be for him to be a long-term effective pitcher. So, yeah, I think clearly starting out somewhere in the minor leagues is the best bet for this young man. And we've talked before about not just in terms of getting him ready for baseball-wise, but it's a guy that has been living in Cuba his whole life. He's got to get used to what it's like to be a baseball player in America, just on the life side of it.
Yeah, and you know, that's an adjustment for anybody that goes into organized baseball. You know, after talking to guys over the years that have gone into baseball from college, you know, I haven't talked to as many guys that came straight from high school, but it's even a change for the guys that go from college that end up in Billings or was down in Sarasota, now it'll be in Goodyear. You know, having to take care of yourself, being able to find a place to eat after the game, taking care of yourself, eating right, those kinds of things. He needs to, you know, of course, it's a lot easier to take care of those things when you're on a major league roster when you got $100 a day in meal money.
I guess so, yeah. Well, there's just a whole lot of issues that go into that, but I guess everyone's agreed that this kid has a boatload of talent. He's been everything the Reds could have hoped for, I think. And so whether he makes the team out on opening day, and we're agreed that he probably shouldn't, whether he does or not, though, you know, if this kid can stay healthy, we may have a gem on our hands here. So
yeah,
that's
exciting. I don't think anybody at this point is questioning the signing.
No. I think everyone's agreed that it was worth every penny and more, especially when you consider how the Reds structure the contract they're going to maybe have him under their under team control at a fixed cost for longer than if they just dumped a bunch of money on him up front, like generally happens in these situations. So,
right. You know, and another part of this situation that our poster Pinson 343 brought up that this kind of the PR that Chapman's getting kind of takes the emphasis off of Homer and allows Homer to not to have to answer all the questions and be the center of attention and all that, and he can go about his business. And that may be a secondary effect of this that I don't think anybody planned or anything like that, but it could benefit us.
Oh, I think that's absolutely a wonderful observation, and it's something that I actually want to talk about in a moment. We'll go ahead and jump into it now because it's a perfect perfect storm of events, or it could be. You know, Homer Bailey has been – well, he's been Aroldis Chapman in previous spring trainings where everybody was kind of watching him to see what he's going to do. And this year, he had sort of his breakthrough last year, and everyone's, talked about how Homer, there was a Paul Daugherty in the Inquirer wrote that, he's grown up. Homer's finally grown up on us, you know. But you think about, I never would have guessed, I guess the way to put it is, I never would have expected that in the spring training of the year when Homer Bailey was finally expected to take his spot in the starting rotation for Cincinnati, that he'd kind of be an afterthought. And that I agree 100% with you and with Pinson. That's a fantastic thing because it gives him a chance to go about his business without all that pressure on him. And we were already hoping Bailey would have a big year this year. You know, maybe this is going to help.
Yeah, it sure isn't going to hurt. And I think any time any pressure you can take off of a young player is going to help him.
Definitely. And you talk about that pressure. I wonder how much of the pressure is getting through to Chapman, given that he doesn't speak the language very well, if at all. It may not be affecting Chapman, as young and confident as he is, and not being able to speak the language, but. Another thing, it's taken some of the pressure off, I was going to say Homer, but also Johnny Cueto. You know, we talk about these young pitchers that we're so excited about. Cueto's still a young guy, and Bailey and Cueto have a good chance of being the top two starters in this rotation this year if things go well. And so not only am I excited about being able to say that about two young pitchers like that, but you know, hopefully, like I said, a perfect storm. Things are setting up well for some of these pitchers to have a big year.
Yeah, you posted. I think you posted a list of all the young pitchers. You know, and the point isn't that they're all going to be successful, but the point is, if you've got this many that seem to have some talent, you only need a handful of them to be successful, and you put together quite a staff.
Exactly. You know, a couple of the ones that pitched this week and did fairly well. Mike Leake, last year's first round draft pick, made his sort of not his major league debut, his spring training debut at the club, and just looked like he'd been around forever. Everyone's reaction to it was just that he just had command. He acted like he knew what he was doing out there. Acted like he'd been there before, and that was sort of his scouting report, was that the guy just knows how to pitch. He's not going to overwhelm you with his fastball, or you know, he's not tall, but the kid knows how to pitch. And similarly, Travis Wood has pitched you know, his first outing this year after coming off an incredible year last year. You know, with a 1.21 ERA last year when he was in Double A before getting brought up, he had a great spring debut. So you see those two guys, Leake and Wood, and you see guys like
Maloney Homer. Had a good first appearance also.
Yeah, he got lit up earlier today, evidently. But he looked really good. The game that he pitched, the first game was the television game that I got to see on Fox Sports, and I got a chance to watch him, and he looked like he had command, and I still think he's the leader in the clubhouse for that fifth spot in the rotation, which we're going to be talking about later in the podcast. But and then you got some of these, you know, other guys in the minors. I mean, there's so many, you know, even our buddy Matt Klinker, all the way down. You've got a number of guys, and you don't have to have, you need to have really four or five of them turn out, you know, and you're going to have one of the best rotations in the game. And so I like the chances of that. And if there's one thing for Reds fans to sort of hang their hat on to be excited about, that's it. And that's what sort of gotten me so excited over the last couple of weeks, just watching these young guys.
Yeah, it's just almost unprecedented. It hasn't happened in a long, 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 long time that we've had this kind of pitching talent in the organization.
Yeah. Now, that said, I'm not sure how many spots in the starting rotation or in the bullpen are available this year. You know, there seems like not just in the rotation, but on the entire roster, there are very few open spots. A lot of people that are fighting for sort of a limited number of spaces. Who do we have in the starting rotation? I guess has the team. We got four that have got the team made: Aaron Harang, Bronson Arroyo, Johnny Cueto, and Homer Bailey. You would think. So we got a bunch of guys going for that fifth spot. Who do you think is going to win it?
I'm not ready to predict who's going to win it. It's too early in the spring. I said going in that Lair is the guy that I would guess. But I think the guys that are in competition for it, I think you got Chapman, I think you got Lair, I think you got Owings, you think you got Wood, Maloney, and even maybe Wells are all in competition for it. And the question, I think, is how quickly do they weed down? Because there aren't going to be a whole lot of innings to get a good look at five or six guys for that number five spot.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm back now. I had to step away from the mic for just a moment there. I threw up when you said something about Kip Wells having a chance of making the starting rotation.
Now, I heard you were the president of the Kip Wells fan club.
Yeah. Fully paid member, and not that I'm also the president. Oh, good grief. I'm not going to get into Kip Wells because the whole idea that he might have a chance of making the major league roster disgusts me. The guy has been terrible for the last seven teams he's played for. There's no excuse for that. But back to the point, my opinion has been, I said it a moment ago, and now, that Matt Maloney probably has a bit of an edge over everyone because I think the Reds want a left-hander. I think he might get a better shot. And he finished the year up last year. But you're right, there's a lot of guys. Dusty Baker said today that, you know, cuts, I don't know when they're going to do cuts, but he sort of was complaining offhand to Mark Sheldon earlier today that, you know, it's hard to get everybody enough time. At some point, you know, he's got to get his guys ready that he knows are going to be on the team, and so they're going to have to do some cutting. So we may see sooner rather than later some cutting there in the staff. And you know, I don't know who's going to do it. I'm scared to death they're going to give it to Chapman. I wouldn't mind seeing Maloney. Frankly, I wouldn't mind seeing Micah Owings win it, if only because it'd be fun to see how long it takes before Marty Brenneman's head explodes. He's not the president of the Mike Owings fan club, certainly. So,
here's my next question as we move out of the starting rotation here. How many pitchers do you think they'll carry when they come north, east, whatever?
17 or 18, I guess, is probably what Baker would like to have.
Less. I mean, the more pitchers you have, the less pitching changes you make.
Right. And if you don't know what that means, none of us know what it means, but go check out the post at redlegnation.com that Chris had about that. Gee whiz. I think at 12. Certainly.
Would you agree that Massett, Rhodes, Burton, Herrera, and Cordero all have the team made?
Yes. Yes. I'm looking down the list here to see if there's anyone else I think has the team made. You said Herrera, right?
Yep. And I think Mike Owens has the team made.
Yeah, I do too. I think Mike Owens is absolutely. What the question is going to be whether he's in the bullpen or not. Right. Or in left field, you know.
Do you think Mike Lincoln has the team made?
He's got a major league contract. That ridiculous contract that Walt Jocketty, you know, what's up with his 2-year contracts given that year to Mike Lincoln and Willie Taveras? Come on, Jocketty. I don't think he's got the team made, especially after his poor performance. But I think he's probably, right next on the list, the top of the list, and I'm not really sure why, frankly. He's not performed. He didn't perform that well the year before he got the he was adequate, I guess, but the year before he got the big contract.
If we assume that Lincoln doesn't have the team made and that Owings is not the number five, if Owings is the fifth starter, then we got two spots open in the bullpen. If Owings is not the fifth starter, you got one spot open in the bullpen.
And scanning down the list, I wouldn't be surprised to see.
I'm looking at Bill Bray. I'm looking at Carlos Fisher.
Yeah, Fisher's the one I was going to say. Bray. You know what I've been hearing? I heard today was that Anerio Del Rosario.
They're very high on him. He throws a heck of a sinker.
Yeah, I think he's got a sidearm motion or something. And I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody like that. Come north with the team. 6'2", 165. You talk about tall and lanky.
Weighs the same. Use him for the stirred drinks.
I know it. He weighs the same as Daniel Ray Herrera, who's eight inches shorter. I wouldn't be surprised to see him. I wouldn't be, frankly, I wouldn't be that surprised to see Chapman make the team out of the bullpen. Maybe start him out in the bullpen.
That's not really the Reds' M.O.
True, they don't generally do that, although in a lot of cases it probably would be a good idea. That's a good point. The Reds aren't.
And I'm not sure in his case right now it is a good idea. In the adjustment period, I want this kid to go somewhere where he's going to get the pitch.
Well, he's been pitching in his life. It's not like he's not had experience, but I agree with you. And I don't think it's a good idea to bring him east with the team anyway out of spring training, but – if they don't feel like he's quite ready to be a starter, I wonder if they're thinking it'll be, because he'll put some butts in the seats, whether or not they should bring him.
Well, that's a concern for me, even John Fay, when he initially said that he thought Chapman would make the 25-man, he even mentioned that as one of the reasons.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. He's single-handedly almost created a ton of excitement around the Reds. When you talk about their, ESPN is talking about the Reds and all these other national media outlets talking about the Reds now because of Aroldis Chapman. I mean, at some point they're in the business to put butts in the seats. And so that's got to go into the discussions.
They haven't figured out yet that if you win, you'll put butts in the seats.
Exactly. Well, it's been so long. Nobody in that organization has been around since they won, so they don't understand that concept.
True.
Who else could possibly make it there real quick? Is there anybody else just looking down the list?
The bullpen,
I don't know.
See anybody. I guess theoretically, if Owings is the number five, Lair could make the bullpen. They're not going to use him for a short guy.
Right.
But if Lair isn't the number five guy, I'd rather see Lair in Louisville.
One sort of wild card here is that Dusty Baker said today he's not decided whether or not they're going to bring three catchers with them to open it.
But we haven't gotten that far yet. We were going to talk. But the catcher has to play other positions, he said.
Right. But if they bring three.
You know who he's talking about. You know, Wilson Castillo plays 22 positions and none of them well.
Right. None of them on the major league level. Or what should, none of them at a talent level worthy of making the major leagues. I don't believe. I don't understand. I don't understand the fascination with Wilson Castillo. If they bring three catchers, the logical solution would be to only bring 11 pitchers, especially early in the year when you don't really need a fifth starter because there's so many off days. But that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is their bench, just like last year and the year before and the year before and the year before, they'll end up not bringing somebody on the bench. My guess would be Paul Yonish would end up not making the team if they don't have an extra spot because he's going to be the last man on the roster. It hamstrings Dusty's in-game management, and he doesn't need any more help hamstringing himself.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at this. I mean, the starting infield all is set. We know what that's going to be.
Right. Who's going to be Rose, Concepcion, Morgan, and Perez?
In the outfield, I mean, we've got Bruce and Dickerson and Gomes have the team made. I believe Stubbs has the team made unless he just has an absolutely horrible spring.
I believe he'd have to fall on his face, out of the batter's box at least once a game not to make the team. I think Drew Stubbs is absolutely on the opening day roster. I agree with you, unless he does something crazy. He pulls a Ben Roethlisberger or something.
So that's eight guys. So now we're at 20. We got our two catchers, which takes us to 22. So that means we got three spots left.
Two catchers are Hannigan and Hernandez, for those of you out there that aren't paying attention.
So
we got how many left now?
We still need three.
Okay.
Aaron Miles makes this team.
Aaron Miles makes the team if he's healthy, and he's supposed to be back sometime next day or two. I agree.
So now we're down to that's a utility infielder.
Yeah. I'm going to say this. I think Drew Sutton makes the team. Because he plays several positions, including the outfield. He's sort of like the Jerry Hairston, Ryan Friel type in that sense.
But aren't he and Miles the same player?
Probably. But I think the Reds like his versatility. I think he makes the team. I really do.
If he makes the team, then that means either Nix or Ballantyne don't.
Right. Yeah.
And Ballantyne's out of options.
Yeah, Nix is on a minor league deal, so he could be... He could be optioned.
If he'd go down.
Yeah. Well, if he's on a minor league deal, then I think he's doesn't have any choice.
It may have one of them waiver deals, if you don't make the big club. Because he was invited to the big league camp. And a lot of times those guys can opt out if they choose.
But you see, if they're gonna keep Stubbs, Gomes, Dickerson, and Bruce, they're only gonna keep one more outfielder anyway at most. And I think that still leaves a spot for Sutton. Sutton and Miles are both switch hitters. I think they both make the team.
If you think they're only going to keep one more outfielder, wouldn't you think it'd be Nix, a left-hander?
I would think it would be, but
plus, gives you some pop off the bench.
And it's just going to be a question whether they're willing to try to lose to risk losing Ballantyne. And I don't know what to think about Ballantyne. Some days I think, this guy, if you just give him some at-bats, he might be something, Certainly a quality fourth outfielder, if nothing else. But Ballantyne or Nick, as I look at it, Nix is not on the 40-man roster. Ballantyne is. So that might be the answer. Of course, if they have to option Ballantyne, they'd have to remove him to keep Nick. So,
yeah, if it came down to one or the other, I mean, it would just be for that 40th spot.
They'd switch him, but.
And this is assuming we aren't going to have any injuries and all that between now and the end of Castillo's not on the 40-man either.
Right, right. So they'll probably, remove Yonder Alonso from the 40-man or something like that to put Wilson Castillo on it. I don't know what they're going to do with Ballantyne Nix, assuming everybody stays healthy. And who knows? They may sign Darnell McDonald and bring him with the club, and leave and get rid of both Nix and Ballantyne. You never can tell with this team. But I think you're right. I think that's what it comes down to. I think the – and then, you know, we're still not talking about Paul Yanish, who I've been saying – since they signed Cabrera, I've been saying I think Yanish is in AAA to start the year anyway because I don't see how he fits in. If he makes a team, it's probably at the expense of Sutton, but I'm not sure how he helps. I think I'd rather have Sutton on the team. What do you think?
Well, the only way Yanish makes sense to me is if Dusty's going to pull Cabrera late in ball games, and he ain't going to do that.
Never in a million years. You know, last year, if you recall when we had Gonzalez, Alex Gonzalez, Dusty would not play Yanish. I mean, he wouldn't play. It seems like weeks at a time he'd get to play an inning or something.
I think he was like Ralph Mouth in Happy Days when he was on the bench. You know, he'd have his street clothes on under his warm-ups.
That's right, yeah.
I think that was what Yanish, I don't even think he dressed. I think he just put warm-up suit on under his over his clothes.
And so a nickname for Paul Yanish was born, Paul Ralph Mouth Yanish.
There you go. But, you know, but the other issue is, to me, assuming you're correct and Yanish starts the year at AAA. Who
exactly. I know where you're going. Yeah.
Rick Sweet is going to have some difficult decisions to make in Louisville.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he'll have Zach Cozart there in AAA as well as Valleca, who I guess they're moving to second base, they say. But and of course, you're going to have Todd Frazier there.
The Reds are going to want Frazier. They may want Frazier to play second base down there.
I hope they do. I think that's the best place for him. But so yeah, I don't know what they're going to. I think Yanish is, frankly, my opinion is his time probably in Cincinnati is just about coming to a close. Maybe he'll get dealt. I don't know. He brings otherworldly defense. He's so much fun to watch defensively. But the guy's not going to hit much. He won't hit as much as Drew Sutton. Number one, Dusty would not play him anywhere other than shortstop last year. Yanish, played I think two innings at third base. With all those injuries the Reds had, Dusty Baker refused to move Paul Yanish anywhere else around the infield other than pitcher. He let him play pitcher. Sutton played every position, including the outfield. Yanish is clearly not a favorite of Dusty Baker, and I just don't see how – it's obviously not all Dusty Baker's choice here, but I don't see how they keep Yanish. I don't see how he makes sense with the roster makeup as it is. So that's my opinion. I think Sutton and Yanish goes down or Yanish gets traded. I think probably I'd have Zach Cozart getting the bulk of the playing time in AAA. At least Cozart's got a chance of his plate discipline's not bad. He's got a chance of being an okay hitter. Tough decisions for Rick Sweet and Louisville. I agree with you.
Yeah, they really are. Rick down there is going to have he's going to pull some hairs out trying to get enough playing time for all the talent he's going to have.
Yeah, it's
a good problem to have though.
It is, and it's been a while since the Reds have had that problem. In the outfield, I'm not sure what they're going to do in the outfield down there. They'll have we haven't talked about Juan Francisco, who I think the Reds would have liked to make this team out of spring training. I don't think he's got a chance at this point. Although we're still early, I need to say that. But you have Francisco out there, although they've got him listed as an infielder on the 40-man roster. He's probably a left fielder. You got Frazier, if he doesn't play second base, I guess he's a left fielder. You've got Chris Heisey, who, if he's in the majors, is going to be a left fielder. Probably will be in center field if he's down in Louisville. I don't know.
I think Francisco or Frazier will play third base down there.
Yeah, I guess so. Actually,
I'm guessing, but
but only one of those two has the chops to play third base in the major league. So,
Francisco is not a third baseman in the big leagues. I'm not convinced he's an outfielder in the big leagues, but it's funny because, I don't know if he said this in the interview or whether we were just talking about it later, but Logan Parker says that Francisco is just a phenomenal hitter. I mean, he says he hits more bad balls than anybody he'd ever seen. He calls him the Reds' answer to Vladimir Guerrero.
Well, I'm afraid there's only one Vladimir Guerrero. Francisco, I don't know. Yeah, he's got otherworldly power. And somebody had the stat of, I believe it was about Francisco, number of balls outside the zone and his ability to hit those. But I don't know. I don't see it with Francisco.
I don't either, but the only thing I'll say to that is Logan has seen him play a lot more than I have.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And you know what? The Reds brass has seen him as well, and they are and have been pretty high on him. They've seen him more than we have as well. The times I've seen him, I like the kid. It seems like he's a pretty good player. I'm just not sure where he fits in or how, especially with this organization. I don't see it. I don't know. So I'm pulling up his minor league numbers now. Actually, I want to see what his hitting numbers looked like last year. And again, you're talking age 22 in Carolina, so that's not that old. You know,
yeah, that's 818 the majority of the year. You know,
yeah. But,
you know, 818 OPS. You know, his on base percentage is terrible, but it's always going to be terrible. But his slugging was over 500. You can't complain too much about that.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't see any progress in learning the strike zone in the major leagues. You know, I don't see how you can get by with that lack of plate discipline in the major leagues. I just, you can get by with it in the Southern League maybe, or in the International League. Although his on-base percentage in 22 games in Louisville was .384, but that's because he hit .359. His on-base percentage is all batting average pretty much.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
The other guy that we haven't mentioned is Danny Noren. And if there's a guy in the Reds organization that gets less respect with decent numbers than Danny Noren, I don't know who it is.
I'm with you. Danny Noren is a great candidate to be a sort of a fourth outfielder platoon type guy in the major leagues. The guy hits. That's all he does. He hits.
Yeah. You know, he had a kind of a down year a little bit last year. It came on towards the end, I believe. But even at that, I mean, his on base percentage was almost .340. You know, and he hits. You know, he hits. What is he? He's a right handed hitter, right?
No, he bats left.
Okay, he kills right handed pitching. Then I mean, just absolutely destroys it. And you know, and we may have talked about this before. Or else, I talked about it with somebody else. I was kind of surprised that Danny wasn't selected in the Rule 5.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I thought maybe an American League team would take a chance with him. You know, apparently, supposedly he's not a real good defensive player, you know, but he could have DH'd and platooned a little bit, and, you know, they could have hit him on the bench somewhat out in the American League. And he's put up good numbers for the Reds almost every year, and nobody ever talks about him.
Yeah, he's a good candidate for a type of guy to come up at age 25 or 26 and, OPS 800, 850, something like that. And if you pick his spots, he may be higher than that if you just spot him against just right-handers. I just don't, I don't know.
But he's another one that Rick Sweet's going to have to find a place for him down in Louisville.
Right, yeah, either left field or first base or some combination of the two, and you've got as we said, Francisco maybe out there and Chris Heisen at first base. You got Yonder Alonso, and I don't know. We'd like to see Logan Parker bumped up to Triple A at some point this year. It's just I'm glad I don't have his job. I guess we'll say that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's going to be a.
You know, Dorn's slugging percentage is every bit, not to interrupt there yet, sorry about that, but his slugging percentage is every bit as good as what Juan Francisco's has been, although he's a little older and maybe been a year older at each level. But his career on-base percentage in the minor league is .375. I mean,
his slugging's over 500.
Yeah, I don't know why he doesn't get talked about. I agree. Yeah, Sweet's got a tough job.
And he even and talk about disrespect. He hit a home run yesterday, and they misprinted his name in the Enquirer today.
Oh, nice. Oh, poor guy. You talk about can't catch a break. I mean, he's the Rodney
Dangerfield. Of no respect.
Yeah, he's the Rodney Dangerfield of no doubt about it of the Reds organization. See Jay Bruce homer today, since we're talking about the outfield there?
No, I haven't seen anything about today's game yet.
Yeah, they lost 10-4 to the D-backs. So, anyway, you know, they're really – back to sort of the subject we were on, there aren't really very many open spots, are there? And I don't remember a year when things have been sort of so wide open for the Reds, but there are very few. And you talk about maybe a couple spots in the bullpen, maybe one, maybe a in the one starting position spot, and then, you know, maybe – I don't know. It's down to – four or five people for two positions in terms of position players.
Yeah, I think there's going to be shuffling around in the outfield. You know, I think you're going to see, you know, Gomes and Stubbs and Dickerson and Bruce. You know, I think Jay will play most of the time. I think against some tough left-handers, they'll probably sit him down and, you know, throw Johnny Gomes over there or Chris Dickerson. I think Stubbs will play most of the time. You know, assuming he's playing okay. Hopefully, you know, he'll be getting on base because he's going to, you know, we all know he's going to lead off.
Yeah.
It's a shame that Dusty's got the pre-printed lineup cards because Chris Dickerson is a much better option leading off.
Oh, sir, he'll get on base. He'll get on base more. I think so anyway. Yeah, and of course, your worst hitter out of your first eight is likely to be Orlando Cabrera, but he's a shortstop, and Dusty's shortstop's bat second.
Yep.
Period. That's it.
Yeah.
You knew that wasn't going to change. We're watching a full year of – they got rid of Alex Gonzalez finally, who'd been batting second most of the time, and plugged in Paul Yonish, who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, plugged him right into the second spot in the lineup. Dusty and his lineup shenanigans. Chris Heisey played some right field today. I wonder if Chris Heisey's got a chance. I don't see how with the names ahead of him, but he's the type of guy that I wouldn't be surprised – in June, he's in the major leagues to stay.
I wouldn't be surprised either, but I think a lot of this stuff, these decisions, and it's not fair, but it's the business of it, is going to come down to who has options.
Yep, no doubt, man. Heisey certainly does.
In that case, you know, Heisey and Frazier and Francisco are going to be in Louisville.
Yeah.
No matter Frazier and Valleca. You know, Valleca started out playing pretty well.
Yeah, I think Valleca is the type of guy. He's not going to be – I don't know if he's going to be a starter, but I think he is going to be – could be a solid backup for the next few years on the major league level once he makes it. I'm not sold that Valleca's star should have fallen as much as it did after one bad year.
I said that too, and I saw him play at Dayton and a little bit in Sarasota, and he was very impressed and very impressive. I mean – he just seemed to be one of those guys, and this is one of those things that you can't prove, but he seemed to me to be one of those guys that makes the players around him better.
That's sort of what I said about Todd Frazier after watching Frazier play several times last year. But Valleca had a dumb injury last year. He punched a water cooler or something, and he was out for a while, and that caused his – you know, he'd be off to a slow start anyway, and by the time he got back, he hit fairly well the rest of the season, but his season was basically shot. So should that one bad season with those extenuated circumstances he was one of the top, three or four prospects in the system last year, according to everybody. So
yeah, he set records in the Pioneer League. He crushed the ball at Dayton before, and I think he was only in Dayton for half a season, something like that, before he got called up to Sarasota. I'm taking a look at that now.
Type of guy that.
Yeah, he played 79 games in Dayton in 2007. And 57 in Sarasota that year, and you know his OPS was .846 in Dayton when he got called up.
Wow, he's the type of guy that could be a second baseman. I don't know if that spot's going to be available in this organization, but a major league second baseman possibly. I think he'll end up being a sort of a all around the infield type on the major league level. But who knows? If he starts out the regular season well this year, really hitting the ball, he might force his way back into the Reds' plans, or at least force his way into a trade somewhere where somebody needs a second baseman.
Yeah, and he could and this is me just talking, and I don't know anything, and I readily admit that all the time, but he could end up being one of those gritty second base, middle infield guys that plays hard and goes 1 for 3 every day, or 1 for 4 every other day or whatever, and plays hard and breaks up double plays and hustles and takes the extra base, and one of those guys, a little spark plug type guy, and they're always valuable whether they're starting for you or whether they're on your bench,
and they're more valuable in the Queen City because Reds fans love that kind of guy, and so you'll have a fan favorite on your hands as well.
Absolutely.
So yeah, you did say something a moment ago that I think I need to point out. You are absolutely correct. You don't know anything.
I admit that every day.
Sorry, I couldn't let that pass without agreeing with you 100%. So lots of decisions to make. We're still early in the spring. We always every year we complain either at Red Leg Nation, or I think we complained about this last year on this podcast about the Reds making the heavyweight decisions based on a few at bats or a few innings pitched in spring training. You know, I hate seeing any spots won or lost based solely on what happened in the spring, because there's so many variables about the spring. But with these last couple of spots, that may be what, yeah, you know, what tells the tale, whether it's Sutton or maybe Giannis will hit well for 4 weeks or something, and you know the Reds will decide he can make the team, or maybe Ballantyne will start crushing the ball, and the Reds will decide they don't want to part ways with him yet. So it'll be interesting to watch how all that goes the next few weeks.
You mentioned Matt earlier when we were talking about the pitching, and I did want to pass along that I did get an email from Matt today. He was talking, it was just like a two-line email, but he said that pretty much that the facilities out there are just what everybody's been saying, that they're phenomenal, that everything really seems to have been done right.
Wow. I'm jealous. I hear a rumor that you might get a chance to go out there next year. I'm really hoping that happens.
Well, my boss, better known as my wife, informed me that we're going to spring training next year, so I'm getting ready to put it on the calendar.
Oh, man, yeah, you need to plan that immediately. We're going to get you an official Red Leg Nation video camera and a recorder and have you out there doing a little work while you're out there.
We could take up a collection like C. Trent did.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. Take up a collection to get you out there. No, you're right. No, because if we did that, you'd have to go out there and work instead of enjoying yourself. And we know
that's not going to happen.
That's right, yeah. That should be fun. I'm still hoping that I can work it out with my schedule and everything. My wife's given me the go-ahead to do the fantasy camp out there, the Reds fantasy camp. So I'm still hoping I'll get a chance to do that next year. I don't know if it's going to be next year or the year after. But
I've had a couple of friends that did that. And I don't know what it costs now. I think at the time it was $5,000, the $3,000 or $5,000. I can't remember. And they said it was worth every dime.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite that much. I don't remember, though. It's been a while since I looked at this point. But, yeah, everyone I've talked to just say, yeah, it's just, you know, for people like us who are just, you know, insane and for some reason still hanging on to this team after all these losing seasons.
I'm too old.
I guess it's sort of right up our alley.
I'm too old for that now. I'd end up on life support.
I might, too. All right, let's move on to another topic that I think's fairly interesting. It was a post that you made a couple days ago, and you added a poll at Red Leg Nation, and I thought it was a real interesting poll. Why don't you go ahead and, if you want to, or if you want me to, I'll go ahead and let me just go ahead and sort of preview it. Your question was, what must the Reds accomplish for Dusty Baker to return as manager in 2011? And I think this is a really interesting question because there's a sort of a pretty wide the opinions vary widely on Dusty Baker. I know what my answer is on here. I think it might be the same as yours. I know what I voted in the poll, but what do you think about Dusty's chances of being back?
Well, I tried when I wrote the poll question, I tried to cover every eventual, you know, every possible occurrence that I could think of. I don't think there's any. Well, I won't say I don't think there's any. I think there's very small chance that Dusty doesn't finish 2010 as the Reds manager.
I agree.
I guess if they absolutely collapsed, you know, in April or May, I guess it's possible. But I don't foresee that happening, and I think it would really have to be awful for them to let Baker walk. So other than that, I tried to cover every eventuality I could think of. And basically what I said is I think they need to win a wild card spot. I think they need to make the playoffs. I think if they make the playoffs, I think Baker's back. I don't think a winning record will do it for him.
Yeah.
So I think the bar isn't completely low, but it's not real, real high either.
Yeah, I agree, and that's the way I voted, win a wild card spot. That's actually running third in the voting right now. I disagree with the number one, 45% of voters said that Dusty just has to post a winning record this year to be brought back. And I don't see that happening. You know, you got a new GM
now. You don't see them having a winning record, or you don't see that being enough to bring Dusty back?
I don't see that being enough to bring Dusty back. I think there's a chance they'll have a winning record.
I would hope that the Reds' expectations would be higher than that for their manager.
Well, and I think that there's a couple of things that go into that. I think that the next 3 years or so are really going to be the window is going to be opening for this team to compete. Is Dusty Baker the guy you want in charge of these young arms? Is he the guy you want in charge of this team? We've never seen him. You know, his success that he's had, he has had some success as a manager, it's all been with veteran-laden teams. But in addition, his contract is up this year. I agree that he'll serve out the year. But at the end of the year, you've got Walt Jocketty as your general manager, who did not hire Dusty Baker, who you would imagine wants his guy in his manager or as manager of the team. And it's a perfect opportunity for him to bring in his guy. We've heard rumors that that guy might be Tony La Russa, and we'll save the complaining about that for another day. But either way, I just don't see a winning record being enough for them not to make a move. Maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong before. We'll be wrong again. Winning a wild card spot, as I said, was third place with 17%, and making the playoffs and having a good showing, that was second place. That's 18% in the voting. So
yeah, there's like two votes different right now between those two. So
right, 34%. I don't know about this, but 8%, not 34%, 8% say that he'll be back no matter how the team plays in 2010. And I don't know. That should have been 0%. If the team craters and wins 60 games, you think he'll still be back? No. 5% say that he won't be back no matter how the team plays. They win the World Series, he's going to be back. They win the National League Central, frankly, he'll be back. I think they'll be back if he wins a wild card spot. And that was the other one. 1% says he has to win the National League title to come back. 2% say he has to win the World Series. And 4% say he has to win the Central. So, interesting question. And I think it's something to watch, certainly as the season goes on, and watch how Dusty manages this team if he feels like his job's on the line. So, I don't know.
Yeah, because there definitely are different ways you manage, one is you manage for long terms, and one is you play every game like it's deciding your season.
What happens if they get to July and, they're six games or five games out of the wild card spot, which is not out of the race, but it's also, you got four or five teams ahead of you. And Dusty starts, they bring up Chapman, and he starts pitching Chapman and Bailey and Cueto, 120 pitches a game, just trying to kind of like he rode Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood that year. Now, whether he caused their injuries is up for debate. I'm not going to get into that argument today, but there's no question that as they were, fighting for the playoffs that year, he rode them hard. And, that's going to be something that concerns me. Because the Reds are going to have a lot of things break right to be in contention anyway. I don't want to see him reverting back to some of this crazy stuff just to save his job. That concerns me.
Yep, it does me also. But you would hope that the front office would set the marching orders before they allowed the future of this ball club. But, look at what has happened to Harang in the last 2 years.
Definitely, definitely. So, oh, goodness, I don't know. Well,
now I'm depressed.
Yeah, but I'm resolved to be happy and excited, and so I'm not going to talk about this anymore. We're just going to move on, and we thought about maybe talking about the dust up with Brandon Phillips and John Fay this week, and I don't know if I've got the heart to get into that right now either, because I'm trying to stay optimistic, Chad.
Well, I think we've kind of beat that to death on the blog. There are a couple of guys that think that Fay was that John was out of line. There are a couple of people that think that John was just writing what he believed. I think maybe you could make the case that John's a beat writer and not a columnist, and that maybe this was the job of a columnist maybe and not the job of a beat writer. I don't know. But maybe John's just tired of dealing with Brandon Phillips. Dealing with the immaturity of the seeming immaturity of the guy. I don't know the man. He may be the most mature guy in the world. I have a hard time believing it, but, I don't think any of us know what John's motivation was for writing this, but I don't think he was out of line to write it. If he was, his editor would have spiked it.
Yeah, I don't think he was out of line either, regardless of what you think about Brandon Phillips. And every time you say something like this, you get the people coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, quit piling on Brandon Phillips. You know, Brandon Phillips is a good player. Well, you know what? Brandon Phillips is a good player. There's no question about it. I like, you know, in the sort of a vacuum, having Brandon Phillips on my team. He's a great fielder, and, you know, he doesn't kill you at the plate. He's not a number four hitter, really, but although that's what Dusty thinks he is. But he's not the problem with this team. When you start listening to the things, places the Reds need to improve, Brandon Phillips is not near the top of that list. But with Faye, I don't have a problem at all with him sort of calling Phillips out on that. He's not the first beat writer to call Phillips out on this sort of behavior. And, you know, you made the distinction between beat writer and columnist, and I understand that, but it's sort of a different world now. You know, Faye's out there giving his opinions all the time on Twitter and on his blog, and he's not, you know, I guess the borders between columnist and beat writer have changed with the new media over the last decade, and I didn't have a problem with him doing it, agree or disagree with it. And again, I think it looked like to me that it displayed some immaturity on Phillips' part. But I don't know Brandon Phillips, and I love watching him. You know, when he got that big smile on his face, and when he's on base and he goes first to third. You know, when he steals second, third on the same plays he's in a couple times, and you know, I don't hate Brandon Phillips, but I do tire of what we sometimes call the Brandon Phillips show, his act. So, but I don't know. It was a. Now, see there, I said I didn't want to get into this, and you went and got me talking about the whole Phillips thing.
Thanks a lot. My biggest problem with the article was any comparison at all between Brandon Phillips and Barry Larkin. You lose me right there.
Exactly. Yeah. I know Phillips said early on when he came to Cincinnati that's who he wanted to be was Larkin. But you can like Phillips and think he's a pretty good player. But what was the quote that Sparky
Byron
said?
Did he mean Steve Larkin?
That's right. Yeah, maybe he's a good basketball player. Maybe he's Byron Larkin. Yeah,
or Mike Larkin, the linebacker at Notre Dame.
Exactly. Yeah, but not Barry. It reminds me of the quote that Sparky Anderson had about Johnny Bench when someone was trying to compare. I guess it was Thurman Munson maybe to Johnny Bench, and Sparky said, "Let's not embarrass any other catcher by comparing him to Johnny Bench." Well. When it comes to Reds shortstops, I'm a Larkin fan through and through. My favorite player ever. Let's not embarrass Brandon Phillips. Let's not denigrate Brandon Phillips because the things he does well, he does very well. But let's not denigrate him by comparing him to Larkin because he's not Barry Larkin. And that's not even a put down. There are very few Barry Larkins.
There's only been one here. I mean, I've been watching Reds baseball since the mid '60s, and I've gotten to see some pretty darn good shortstop play. And I won't even just say shortstop. I said some pretty good infield play.
Yeah.
And I'll take Barry Larkin defense. You know, well, I won't say that. Next to the two great years, incredible years Joe Morgan had in the mid '70s, I'll take Barry Larkin over any of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Larkin is my favorite player, as I said a moment ago. And, you know, of course. Got to watch his whole career. You know, I sort of came in at the tail end of some of those Big Red Machine guys. But I got a soft spot in my heart for Barry Larkin. We talked earlier how disappointed that we were that he didn't get into the Hall of Fame. But I hope that comes next year. But, yeah, Brandon Phillips is no Barry Larkin. But, you know, Brandon Phillips is Brandon Phillips. He's, you know, I want to like the guy, but, he'll – I don't know. I don't want to –
Can I tell you my Larkin family story real quick?
Yes, please do.
I was at a conference a number of years ago, sitting next to this gentleman, and we got to talking, and I introduced myself, and he introduced himself to me, and he said his name was Larkin. And I said, Larkin? I said, are you? He said, yeah. He said, Barry and Byron are my sons. So it was Barry and Byron's dad. At the time, yeah. I had Xavier season basketball tickets, and I had got a chance to see Byron play. And saw what a class act Byron was. I mean, I saw him come out of locker rooms and sign autographs for kids for seemingly a half hour. And Barry was always just a class act, and it's well known around Cincinnati that the Larkin family are a classy bunch. And I said that to him, and he was very appreciative. But it was kind of cool to meet their dad.
Yeah, I read it, and I don't know if it was when Larkin was retiring or people were doing some retrospectives of him, but I read an article, I can't remember which paper it was in, but and they had a quote in there from Larkin's father that has always stuck with me, and it sort of sort of the way I'm trying to raise my kids in a lot of ways in this respect. Somebody said something to him about all the dirt spots in his backyard where they had home plate or whatever, you know, they were batting out there and playing ball and stuff, and said, you know, why don't you do something about those dirt spots out there? And he said, you know, I'm raising sons. I'm not raising a lawn. And I thought, you know, that we always had those dirt spots in our yard growing up. And although I didn't quite turn out to be the player that Larka was, but that always sort of stuck with me. So that's interesting.
Yeah, pretty that's good a better, there's a pretty good pedigree of athleticism in that family.
Yeah, in all sports. I mean, you know, that, you talk about football, basketball, and baseball. So
yeah, and Byron was offered football scholarships, as was Barry.
Right. Amazing. Well, that's just about time probably to wrap it up. That's a good note to wrap it up on. It's always good to talk about Larkin. Unless there's anything else you can think of, we need to dive into.
The only other thing I wanted to say is, got an interview set up for between now and hopefully between now and opening day with John Fay and with Chris Welsh. They're both going to meet, sit down and talk to us from Arizona. And so we'll get their opinion on the way the roster's shaping up and what they think of Chapman and the rest of our young players and what direction they think the team's going to go this year.
Yeah, it'd be good to get some eyewitness reviews of what's been going on out in a good year. We're going to be doing something sort of new with the podcast over the next few weeks as well. Got some of our other editors at Red Leg Nation sort of up and online now, and we did kind of the overview of the Reds roster and what spots were open today, but we're going to go a little bit more in depth over the next few weeks. Going to try to with some different editors coming on to go over the infield and the outfield and the starting staff and really sort of dive into some of that, as well as talking about whatever's going on in Red Leg Nation at the time. There seems like there's always something going on these days. So, Bill, good talking to you again.
Always good to be talking to you.
Oh, that's true. It is always good to be talking to you. I'm glad you got the chance to do that today. And all of you, I'm glad you got a chance to download and listen to this crazy Southern accent along beside the veteran leader, RedLegNation.com. Hope you'll join us again next time. As always, you can download these podcasts at redlegnation.com/RN Radio. There's an RN Radio tab up there at the top of Red Leg Nation that you can just click on. You can subscribe through iTunes. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/RedLegNation. And then we've got facebook.com/RedLegNation. Number of fans growing daily. Become a fan of Red Leg Nation. And of course, until next time, which hopefully will be sometime in the next few days, we'll be back at you with yet another edition of Red Leg Nation Radio. For Bill Lack, this is Chad Dotson saying so long.